to announce from Zurich, Men's League Switzerland, U.S. program, Austin Matthews.
In the penalty box, Nylander gets an extra shift. William Nylander shoots. He scores! Coach played a hunch, and the kid has his first National Hockey League goal.
Well, guys, we got a pair of off-season signings to talk about, finally, some stuff here. The Leafs signed Swedish defenseman Calle Rosén and Andreas Borgman. Guys, what are your thoughts on the two signings? Jake, why don't you start things off here? What do you think about them, since you're the prospect guru for us?
Obviously, the two guys they signed, Andreas Borgman and Calle Rosén, they're similar in ways, but they're also very different. Obviously, Borgman's a little younger. He's 21, and Rosén is 23. Rosén played for the Växjö Lakers, I'm pretty sure, and Borgman played for HV71, who won the SHL title, and you know, he had a really good year, Borgman did, playing for HV71. He was actually the rookie of the year in the Swedish league, and he also had an incredible playoff where he was pretty much a point per game defenseman, which is really impressive, especially for, you know, under 23 defensemen in European leagues. And you know, he, from what I've seen from him, I haven't watched too many clips of him, but he's supposed to be the more talented of the two. He's got much more upside, and they think he can be, you know, maybe a number five defenseman, a guy who can, you know, play both ways and is a really good skater. But meanwhile, on the other edge of the sword is you know, Calle, I think it's Rosén, but you know, we'll figure that out when people bring it up on Twitter, I'm sure. But Rosén, that, you know, I was listening to Bob McKenzie today, and he was talking about him, and you know, he was just saying how he's a really good two-way defenseman who can skate the puck well. He doesn't have great foot speed, but he's a guy who can definitely, you know, move the puck and can skate himself out of trouble. But you know, the main subtraction on his game is that he's really inconsistent, and that's something that, before he got to Växjö, who was the number one rated team in the Swedish league, he didn't really have any stats to back up his play. And you know, obviously he was playing top pairing minutes with Philip Holm, another guy who's potentially could be signing with the Leafs, and they had a really good year. But yeah, I mean, both of them look like they're going to start with the Marlies, and there's a chance for them to be NHL defensemen. But you know, at this point, I think the Leafs are just trying to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks, because you know, it's going to be very rare for them to hit yet another home run like they did with the Zaitsev signing last year.
Well, the thing with both of them is they're left-handed, so that doesn't fix the right-handed issue that people love to point out. Calle Rosén's had some concussion issues in the past. Are you guys at all concerned about that?
Well, if you look back to, like, for example, last year in the Marlies playoff run, when Andreas Johnsson played his first game, he got totally laid out, and after that, he ended up with a concussion. So, and obviously we all know that once you get a one concussion, then you may be privy to a second one. So, I guess when he gets to the North American ice next season, he'll probably have to adjust to the smaller ice, obviously, and the quicker pace and that type of thing. So, in terms of being concerned about a concussion, obviously you always are concerned about any type of injury, not just concussion. It is something to pay attention to. But if, you know, if he has a hockey sense and that everyone's talking about and rallying about, then hopefully he'll be able to play in a way where he won't be caught into that type of position.
Yeah, we saw last year with Zaitsev, obviously being a 25-year-old rookie, that things worked out really well. That's not always the case with defensemen, because a lot of people like to point towards, you know, once you get past 25, well, hit 25 and get older as a defenseman, your development, it gets really iffy from there on out. It's subjective in itself, arguing about that, but are you at all concerned about that with a guy like Rosén, that he might be kind of capped out potential-wise?
I don't think so. I mean, as you said, defensemen take a little longer to develop. I mean, the Leafs are in a pretty good spot right now with a guy like Travis Dermott, and I'm sure we're going to talk more about him. You know, being, you know, in his first full season of professional hockey, and many are saying he's ready to go into the NHL next season. So I think, you know, age, we shouldn't be too concerned about the age. We should be more concerned about, as Omar was saying, how he adapts, because that's usually what harms the European defenseman coming to the NHL, is their ability to adapt to the smaller ice surface, to just the difference of the game, the more physical nature of the NHL. So I think that's where you have to be a little more cautious. But I mean, you saw the way that some of the Swedish players on the team, like, you know, Jonsson has been able to, I mean, he's finally starting to put up some production with the Marlies. You know, Nylander didn't seem to be bothered by, you know, the changes from Sweden to the NHL. So I'm less concerned about that. I'm just more concerned about the concussions can be a little worrisome, especially we see in the NHL. If he plays in the NHL, that's not a league where players are protected anyway from the physical game. It's actually probably a lot worse there than in the NHL, with a guy like Jake Dodson just allowed to roam free and crushing people. So that's where the concern is. At the same time, you can't argue with getting defensemen for free. I mean, you're just paying cap space and contract space. You're not giving up anything. I think there's not a huge risk taken by the Leafs here.
Okay. Financial-wise, they didn't release the terms or anything like that. It's just two-year entry level. Yeah. I'd assume, based on what we've seen in the past, it's going to be $1 million or less contract for each player, loaded with bonuses. If they can meet those, they'll make more money, but fair to say that, guys, that the contract will likely work out somewhere around there.
Yeah, definitely. If you're always picking another player from a league and then bringing them over, it's definitely going to be a 925, similar to Zaitsev. Obviously, we're not saying that there's Zaitsev level. To get a free agent that's that talented and Zaitsev and bring him over is one thing. So we can't assume that every single player that the Leafs signed in Europe or whatever is going to be that good, but a 925 is probably what it's going to be. Just a matter of time before it gets announced.
Okay, another guy that the Leafs have been, I don't want to say linked to because they haven't really been linked to him, but it's been suggested as an option is Darren Radish of the Erie Otters. Obviously, his brother plays for the Lightning. Well, he doesn't play for Lightning; he's in the organization. But is he actually an option for the Leafs, guys, or is this kind of just throwing names at the wall?
I think it's throwing names at the wall. I think the biggest team that he was linked to was the Vancouver Canucks, because God knows they can need all the help they can get. So, I mean, if people look at him, he's an undrafted overager, so obviously he's free to sign with any team. He's a right-handed, big, strong defenseman. Exactly what people think the Leafs need, so they're obviously going to link him. Whether or not, I mean, people have talked about concerns of, you know, overagers and whether they, you know, playing against younger competition, the OHL kind of puts them on a bit of a different pedestal, and maybe they're just being overhyped. I mean, at the same time, you can't, you take no risk in just signing a guy and giving him an opportunity. You know, he's a guy that can go in with the Marlies if they do sign him, and if he doesn't make the Marlies team, he goes down to the ECHL. So there's no risk of signing these guys. It's just who's looking at them. And as the case with, I guess, the Swedish guys, and as Bob McKenzie, I listened to that segment too, Jake. He pointed out that many of these defense were looking at the Leafs defense, and they're saying there's so much opportunity. Like, it's a great opportunity for these guys. Might as well. The forwards, not so much. They're now realizing there's a logjam that, you know, it's pretty jam-packed. So I think if you're a Leafs, you know, if you're the Leafs, any defenseman that you can get your hands on, you're, especially the younger ones, you're going after them.
Well, Dave, you mentioned the overagers and people not always being a fan of that. Jake, the other argument I've heard with the overage players, you know, you're older than everybody, so you should be ripping it up. How much do you value an overage player, or do you think they're kind of a bit overrated?
I think they're overrated personally. I mean, I think Darren Radish is 21. He's playing with 16-year-olds, against 16-year-olds. Mm-hmm. You know, I would expect he's also playing on the OHL champion, so it's not like he's playing with a bunch of scrubs out there. You know, I just don't see the hype. I mean, there's a reason he wasn't drafted, and I just think they have better players in their prospect depth right now. I mean, he's pretty decent size. I think he's 6'1", like 200 pounds or something like that. But he's never been a great skater. I mean, yeah, he put up some good points, but, you know, this is his fifth year with the Erie Otters. And, you know, he got 81 points this year and ripped it up in the playoffs. But I don't know. He doesn't scream potential top four defenseman. He seems a fringe six guy who I don't even think has the skill set to play in the NHL. I don't know. I just don't see it, especially for you know, overagers who haven't been drafted. I mean, remember the last big Iriot or undrafted guy that went to the Vancouver Canucks? I believe it was Dane Fox. Who the hell is he? Where is he? He played with Connor McDavid. He had like 130 points. He was this highly rated overager that they picked up. And I don't even know if he's even in the AHL. So, I mean, that's what I would have to say about it, especially guys, because the guys that are overagers and are undrafted and are free agents, you know, if you're a good overager and you're, you know, say you're 18 or 19, you're getting drafted. Look at Adam Brooks. I mean, he got drafted, and, you know, a bunch of other guys who are overagers, they generally get drafted in the second time that it can go through. So when you're getting passed up by teams seven times, by 31 different teams, there's clearly something wrong with your game. And I'm looking up, Dane Fox had 0 points in the AHL, 1 point in the AHL, and is in for the Missouri Mavericks in the ECHLs. And he had 107 points in the OHL. So
that's Tyler Biggs, Jake Virtanen type numbers you're talking right there.
Oh, God. Don't
exactly.
Okay, so Jake, what's the difference between him and when Philadelphia signed Philippe Myers after last year's draft? In this
situation? Well, Philippe Myers is 19. He's 2 years younger.
Was he? Okay.
Well, he played for the under 20 team.
Yeah.
Okay, that does make sense.
That's a big difference.
Would you value an NCAA defenseman more than, let's say, an overager, Jake? I heard that.
Because you're playing against older kids. You're generally playing, if you're 21 or 23 in the NCAA, you're playing against kids that are 21, 23 in your age bracket. The OHL is, I think, a better skilled league, but I think the harder league to play in and rip up is the NCAAs. I mean, it's just because there's so many 16 and 17-year-olds in the league. It's just, he has players on his team where he's 5 or 6 years older than them. Mm-hmm. Think about that. And the NCAAs, but he's going to at least be an 18-year-old kid who's draft eligible or is drafted already. So it's a big difference. I think, like, the quality of hockey is obviously better in the OHL, but I personally would prefer a person to develop in the NCAA if you're trying to get them to play in the NHL quicker, because I think you can go in, you get a workout, get bigger and stronger, because you're not playing 100 games a year. You're only playing about 40, and you get a, you know, kind of live your lifestyle that you would as a pro. You got responsibilities of going to classes and stuff like that. Now, I'm not taking anything away from the CHL. I think it's a great league, but that's personally my point of view.
That's just the reality, man.
You just want to go in, and you're going to get bigger and stronger because you're working out every other day, because you're not on the ice every day of the week. You're not playing 4 games a week. You're only playing on weekends.
Okay, so I guess this is our long-winded way of all four of us saying we'd pass on Darren Radish, or would you even just add him for organizational depth?
I'd invite him to at least invite him to, like, the prospect camp.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess, but it's
like, I wouldn't go out of my way to sign him. I mean, it's not like you're going to offer every team's going to offer him the same thing. It's just which team is willing to take a chance on him. And I mean, the Leafs don't necessarily have to.
It's telling that he is supposedly the best available young defense prospect who's up for grabs for free. And the only team that I've heard with interest is the Canucks. And they're one of the worst. They're arguably the worst team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Well, especially when it comes to talent evaluation, too. Not exactly.
I don't know. I don't see it personally.
Yeah, they're like an organizational overhaul, the Canucks. So, circling back to the Leafs defense, though, something that happened obviously since the last time we were on the air was Nikita Zaitsev signed a long term deal, 7 years, boatload of money, 32.5. I think we've talked about that at length on the site, so I won't get into it too much. But what it does do is it tells us that Riley, Gardner, and Zaitsev are pretty much the three long term pieces now on the Leafs blue line. Is there anybody else you guys see possibly joining them? I mean, Travis Dermott's been a name discussed, or is there anybody, or is it still kind of question marks all around?
Yeah, I think in terms of the long-term plan, and for right now, we're going to have to keep it at those three. Like, if we're looking at the other three defensemen on the Leafs, then there's no way in hell. Like, Connor Carrick, it's been okay, but no. Alexei Marchenko, no, and Martin Marincin, No, LOL. If I ever see him in a Leafs jersey, I will literally flip every single table I can see. So, and then when you're going down to the Marlies, probably just like you said, Chris, like the big two defensive prospects are Dermott and Nielsen. And you know, from what other people have said, including Bob McKenzie on Overdrive, that he sees Travis Dermott making the team out of camp. So the only issue I see is also another thing you brought up and also we talked about on the site is that so many lefts. Like, girl, if you're looking at our big three, Gardner, Riley, and Zaitsev, two lefts and a right. You know, Travis Dermott, Andrew Nielsen, both lefts. You know, the two defensemen we signed out of Sweden today, both lefts. So I think definitely in this upcoming draft, as well as the offseason and possibly in the future, the Leafs are going to have to address that right-handed problem, especially if they want to continue with Babcock's tendency to have a left defenseman on the left side and a right defenseman on the right side, which obviously isn't exclusive to Toronto. Like, obviously other teams do that too, but Babcock seems to have a very very keen liking to it. So if he wants to continue with that and then continue to bring up young talent on the back end, then getting young defensemen who can shoot right is going to be a priority for the team going forward.
Well, you mentioned they're very slim with right-handed options, and I mean, when you look at the free agent market or even the trade market, it's pretty slim too. This is something that we've talked about at length off the air about how, you know, well, who do you get? Like, who do you go get that's actually right-handed? Anybody that's actually realistic, guys? I know people love to throw the unicorn potential D-men out there, but it's like, come on. Let's get realistic. Any names?
On the UFA?
Yeah, that's a UFA. That's not Kyle Quincy. That's Babcock's boy. I know it's your nemesis, Jake. You can't stand him, but...
Honestly, I don't even know. I mean, Michael Stone? That's about it.
See, but yeah. The fact that it takes you guys this long to think about it just tells you how bad the right-handed shot market is, right?
Like, it's not even a Leafs problem. It's a league problem. Yeah. I think it's lefty to righty is probably 65%. It's like in basketball. How many guys shoot left? Or shoot with their left hand? I mean, usually people are right-handed dominant, and your right hand goes on the top of your stick. So that's how I shoot. So.
Yeah, like obviously the big fish in this year's offseason is Kevin Shattenkirk, and me and Dave were talking about this off air. Like
he's a righty, but
yeah,
no,
but he's not. I don't want him. Yeah. Like he shouldn't. We don't need him, and he's gonna ask for way too much money than one that he deserves, and that the Leafs can afford to get. And like we're joking, saying that probably the only two teams that he might go to were like Colorado and Edmonton, right? So, like. I guess it just shows, like, you can't rely on the free agency for those right shot defensemen. So I guess you're gonna have to do what Anaheim does and just, you know, draft well. Like, I think me and Dave were talking about this again, that like their top six that are playing right now in the playoffs are old draft picks, where four of them are first round picks. So the Leafs are gonna have to, you know, take notes from them and, you know, and use that moving forward.
Well, the thing that's kind of puzzling with all of this is, where do you play Morgan Rielly the next year? Is it a pretty much foregone conclusion that he's going to play in his offhand again?
I think you have to. Yeah, I'm agreeing with Jake. It's like, I think they're going to try to trade for a defense partner for Rielly. I think that's where they're heading if they want to get a top four D-man this summer. And it's probably going to be a guy that's going to play with Rielly. And I think they'll look at right-handed options. I think those will be the most expensive, so they could then just ask Rielly, or I mean, not even ask them. They're going to tell Rielly, "You're playing your offside again." And I think we've seen it. He's done it many times before. I'm pretty sure when Matt Hunwick was his defense partner in the playoffs,
he did it all series against Washington.
He did it all series. So you know what? And he didn't play bad. Like, that series against Washington was probably his best hockey I've seen him play all season. So, is it a big problem for him? Like, we're not talking about Dion Phaneuf playing his offside. We're talking about Morgan Rielly, who has more talent, better skating. You know, he's a guy that's going to rely on his skating more than his just trying to dump the puck out. So I think I like the idea of Rielly playing his offside, just because there's nowhere else you can go to find a top-pairing right-hand defenseman unless you trade for it. And we all know, if you're trading for it, who's going to be the one that every team's going to ask for? It's going to be William Nylander, and that's going to be a big no.
Yeah, I don't. I think Nylander's completely off the table, especially that he's eligible for an extension this offseason.
I'd lock
him up. Yeah, I'd lock. I think we were all yeah. saying we'd lock him up. 7 years, like 7 years, $7 million. I think that's more than fair. Would you guys not agree? When you look at it in the long term picture of what it's going to equate to over what?
I would hurry up. I mean, watching the World Championships, they're not helping themselves.
Yeah. Well, they can't until I think it's June 1st is the date.
Yeah,
until
but as soon as he gets 1? Back from Paris, yeah, I'd sit him down and say, let's talk.
I'd be like, stop playing hockey. Go eat some donuts. Get fat.
Costco's way too much damn money. Stop it.
Yeah, exactly.
Although Mike Babcock,
he's getting 8 years. That's obvious.
Yep.
I think 6.5 over 8. It would be pretty hard to turn down $50+ million for a 21-year-old. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would hope. I mean, it's worked out. I would look at that Goudreau contract. I believe he got 6.5 over 8. And that would be my comparable for him. I do the same thing with Marner, too.
Yeah, see, to build off that point, like, since Nylander is going to be the first of the big three to be signed, his whatever he makes is going to be, like, the foundation for what Marner and Matthews make.
Yes.
So if we're doing a 6.5 for Nylander, then, okay, then maybe Marner will get, like, a 6.75 or a 7. Because we already know Matthews is going to get, like, 8.9 or something 8. Like that.
Yeah, he's in the class
like,
of his
easily,
own.
Right? Yeah. So, like, you can't give, like, you can't go off and then give Nylander, like, 8 or 9. Okay, then you're screwed. Then you're going to have to give Matthews, like, 10. So I think they really have to be careful and make sure that whatever contract they give Nylander is going to be an appropriate foundation for what they give the other two later on.
Let's get you riled up a bit here, Jake. Something I've seen off forums and other places is, hey, if you can't sign them long term, just bridge them. Give me your thoughts on bridge deals.
Oh my god,
they're for idiots.
Do you want to explain why?
Works so well with the Montreal Canadiens.
Exactly.
You have to, when you're building teams, you have to make gambles. You know, one of the teams in the finals right now, or the conference finals, look at the Nashville Predators. Matthias Ekholm makes $4 million. Roman Josi makes $4.5 million. I would pay him $9 million.
Yeah, he would get that on the open market. Easy.
Yeah.
Oh, look at the deals that they've signed long-term with their really good players. You know why they don't give a shit about having PK Subban make $9 million? Because him and Josi make probably $12 million combined, and they're probably worth that combined.
Yeah, and then, like, the whole, like a point that people try to bring up is that, like, okay, you know, just give him a bridge deal, and after that it'll extend, and then, you know, maybe, like, we'll actually see what kind of player he is. Like, going back to what Jake said in the Montreal example, when Subban's deal was up, he wanted like $8 or $9 million, and told them that. And Bergeron's like, "Oh no, okay, we're just gonna bridge you, okay?" So it was like 2.something, like a 2.75 or something like that.
Yeah, over 2 years.
Yeah, and then what happens? 2 years later, he wins a Norris. Okay, give me my $9 million. So like, there's no point. Just like to Jake's point, just, you know, if you believe in that player, if you believe in their skill, and they're a part of your future, then sign the guy, and then. You know, just don't worry about the consequences. Because, like, for example, like, last year, people were going crazy when we saw that Kadri was going to make 4.5. They're like, oh my god, that's way too much for a third-line center. Okay, yeah, 32 goals. It looks pretty good now. So, just, you know,
that's a risk. Same with Riley. He's what, 7 years, right? Or six? Or they both six years?
So Riley's 6 years at 5 per, and Kadri got 6 years at 4.5 per.
Yeah, that is a beautiful deal. If he can, well, assuming he continues playing.
Another good example of a team that, you know, kind of an opposite polar example is Edmonton, when they had all those first overall picks, and they signed them all to long extensions. That's where the gamble cannot pay off. You have Jordan Eberle making $6 million a year. You had Nugent Hopkins making $6 million a year. I think the only one that really deserved it was Taylor Hall, making the $6 million per year.
And then they traded him.
And then they ended up trading him. So it kind of defuncts what they were trying to do there. So there is, for some teams, yes, it definitely makes sense when you have a guy like PK Subban, you know, William Nylander, they're performing at a really high level, and you know that they're going to be able to perform at that level forever, or as long as you think they can. when it comes to the Oilers and, you know, the Eberle, I guarantee they would want to redo.
Eberle's a pylon. Nobody will even take that guy anymore. He's
exactly
just junk.
So, no, and I totally agree that if you're the Leafs, Nylander's getting the full eight. Matthews is getting the full eight, and so is Marner.
They're all getting eight.
Yeah. I mean, the Blackhawks knew that they were going to have to sign Keith and Taves. Did they?
Oh! Imagine if they didn't sign Keith. Keith makes, I think, like, he makes five? $5.5 million He should make 10.
5-3
And,
yeah.
And Kane that as well. So,
well, Kane. Okay, that's like they're that's like a market value thing because they thought the cap was going up, which it will. It will go up.
It just hasn't.
The US TV deal's up in a year or two. They got screwed a little bit because they thought with the Canadian TV deal, but obviously the Canadian dollar's not holding up their end of the bargain.
Yeah, thank,
but
thank you guys for that one, Jake.
But the US TV deal is coming up, and it's probably going to double. So the cap's going to go up probably, you know, five to ten million over the next five years. So, you know, those are going to even out over time, obviously with inflation and all that stuff. So. But yeah, you definitely want to get them in early now. So you're getting them in through their prime. So you're probably going to have to pay them another second contract, but that's going to be when they're, you know, 28 in that range, which is fine.
Like just
The good thing now is the Leafs have so many young guys that you kind of want to maximize this ELC window, right? Mm-hmm. That's something we've heard at nauseum this whole season. But when you look at teams like you guys just mentioned, the Hawks, the Penguins back when they had Crosby, like, all these teams are maximizing ELC windows, and the Leafs are looking like they're going to do the same thing now that they have an accelerated rebuild on their hands.
The only thing different with the whole – I know everyone talks about the Duncan Keith contract. The main difference, he was signed for 13 years. You can't do that.
I'll still take that all day.
I will definitely take that deal all day, but that's the biggest difference now is that with the 8 years, that 8 years reduces you know, how much a player is going to make because, you know, as soon as that contract is done – they may not make the same amount of money. So, I mean, but
8 years is still a very, very long time.
It is very, but when we're talking about a 22-year-old versus, you know, it's a little different, I think. I think when Keith signed his deal,
it's like 25 or something or 26.
Cuz he had signed a four-year deal and then he signed the 13-year deal. So, I mean, 17 years that he's basically had a guaranteed contract for. So,
well, I think the days of anybody at the age of 30 or older signing a 5-year long-term deal with big money is done. But like, teams don't,
it'll happen this offseason.
It's gonna happen
it's gonna happen this offseason.
I'm not saying it won't happen, but I'm saying they're few and far between now. I don't see a lot of teams committing to that long term. Look at all the issues that you're seeing now. I mean, look at Washington, for example. You can make a pretty good case that Ovechkin has slowed down so much that he's no longer worth his deal. I don't think teams are going to want to lock in long term to these kind of guys. I know he signed the contract when he was younger, and this is
they
the price
say that,
pay,
but they will come June 1. They complain about the years and all that stuff, but then they keep throwing out this stupid money to average players. Happens all the time. Hansel will probably get 6 years.
Oh, Bergevin is just waiting to pick up that phone, and he's like, "Hey guys, look what I did!
Get 6 years."
Well, it's funny you mention centers because the other part that's an issue for the Leafs is centers. Organizationally, the depth for centers is so bad that Colin Greening is playing center for the Marlies. He's been doing that all year. I mean, credit to the guy for actually doing that. But you go down the list of who they have, and, man, it's not very good. Especially now Frederick Gauthier is set to miss an extended period of time.
Thank you, Jake Johnson.
Could be out as long as, what, November, December even? Yeah. Like, maybe even the new year if things don't go as well in rehab. So,
yeah, like that.
Is there anybody overseas, guys? Anywhere, anything?
Like, actually, Omar and I were researching and we're trying to find guys. And we couldn't believe, like, there's, like, nothing out there. Like, there may be something out there. We just don't see it. I mean,
there was one guy available, and it was Shipachov, and he's in Vegas now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the only guy.
Yeah, like, I think that's what makes the goat injury even worse, is that, like, he was probably the one person that you could see, you know, if he worked hard over the summer. Jake hates when I say this. If he had an NHL summer, you know, worked on his skating, then that fourth line spot was probably his to grab. But like now that he's injured, he's probably not gonna be able to skate until like October or September at the earliest. And like now, who do we have? Like, Vegas isn't taking Ben Smith. I still don't understand why they signed him to the 1-year deal, because, you know, you want.
I don't.
okay, from my understanding is that they're probably going to protect Matt Martin because in some region of their conscience or whatever, they feel that Vegas might take him because his $2.5 million contract isn't protection enough, but whatever. So now we have Ben Smith signed to another year, and, you know, if the Leafs don't sign some kind of center in the offseason, what, you know, be it Brian Boyle or I don't know, Joe Thornton, if you want to go crazy, then it's going to be Ben Smith. And you know, like, I honestly think that like the Leafs like depth center problem is like definitely guaranteeing Adam Brooks getting an entry level contract this season, and he's going to go right to the Marlies. So yeah.
And how many teams are just going to be unloading centers? Like, you can't go out and trade for one. I mean, you maybe have to. Maybe there's a team that's trying to, you know, cap dump someone. But I mean, you look at the free agency list. Brooks Like ain't coming back. Joe Thornton is an attractive option, but I think San Jose is bringing him back. Like Daniel Winnick is a guy that's out there. Like, there's nothing that says, okay, he'll be a good fourth. I mean, we're also talking about the fourth line. We're not talking about a guy that's going to fill your second line. Mm-hmm. But it's still, like, the way that the Leafs operated this season, that fourth line center, like, especially with Brian Boyle in the playoffs, he played some, you know, significant minutes.
You want to get a good fourth line player for pretty much free, go call Chicago. You can get Marcus Kruger for probably nothing.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, and the one thing the Leafs do have that's to their benefit is cap space,
which they should really try and maximize now. I mean, I wouldn't have a problem with them throwing 2 years, $8 million a year at, like, Radulov or something.
Wow.
I think it'll take a little more than that, but I get what you're saying.
I mean, you don't think you'd save $16 million over 2 years?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant 2.8. I was like, no way.
No.
2.16, yeah, that makes – yeah, I could see that. The thing with the Leafs, too, it's a good benefit for them, for you guys talking about trades, is they're glut of wingers. Yes, wingers are the easiest to get, but at the same time, the Leafs have some pretty high-end guys that they can move around if they're willing to go that route.
And you they have to.
The teams, yeah, they're going to have to. I mean, you look at some of the teams, too, that could potentially be rebuilding, that has what they need. Look at Detroit. I mean, we can laugh about this all we want. It was a linked rumor during the deadline at the Riley Sheehan and all that. Let's just say their price comes down to an actual realistic price. He could be somebody they get as a fourth-line center if they whiff on Brian Boyle. Mike Green's there if they can't get anybody in the D market to play. That's a right-handed D. Like, there's pieces around the league that they can definitely go get. Jason Garrison, if Tampa's still trying to shed cap space. Like, there's names out there. They're not very flashy, but they're possibilities.
The last thing I want to do is help Tampa Bay shed cap space.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. That was somebody they inquired about,
and Jake would
reportedly.
Jake would greatly agree with that one.
Yeah, great. Jason Garrison, another guy that can't skate.
I know, man. That's why he didn't make any sense when I saw the report either, like during the deadline. But these are names that have been thrown out there, and it goes back to what we were talking about earlier a few minutes ago. The right-handed D market is awful.
Yeah,
it is. You got to draft it, and
yeah,
I don't know. I think obviously they're going to go best player available. I see more value in a centerman currently because there's so many. That could go anywhere from 5 to 15. Well,
hold up. We'll do a draft podcast. Don't worry. You get on here and spew all your draft stuff. You know,
poor Austin. Give it all
the way in one. I'm not bringing up names. I'm just saying this. There's always matter. A lot of
poor
good
Austin
centers.
Doing all this work on the draft, and Jake's trying to steal his thunder in one night.
Hey, that was Jake's show. You know, that was Jake's little roadie. He'll be back. Return to the Jake.
No, but we got to give Jake a lot of time to prepare for this one. Because this might be one of the hardest drafts to predict what's going to happen.
I'm just going to wait to flip the table.
It's a top two and then a crapshoot.
Yep. Hey. Draft podcast. Save that.
Jeez, you can't say anything nowadays, I guess.
Chris is turning into the Leafs front office when it comes to managing the podcast. Don't say
upper
anything.
Upper body injury. Let's Did move on here. World Championships, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, they both put on an absolute show so far. I know people want to see Backstrom and Nylander team up in the blue and white uniform. Won't ever happen, but, you know, it's fun to think about because we're seeing how amazing they are in Sweden. And Mitch Marner is doing Mitch Marner things. Thoughts on it, guys?
Yeah, did a nice old Twitter poll up asking which Leafs player has impressed you the most at the Worlds. Options were Mitch Marner, William Nylander, Philip Holm, and Miro Altonen. If you're asking why Callie Rosen wasn't an option, because he didn't play. And at 55%, it was William Nylander, which is obvious. Like, he's been disgusting the whole tournament. Yeah, obviously Mitch Marner has been playing really well, you know, especially this morning's game actually against
absolutely embarrassed Finland.
No, that's
I don't think it's obvious. Yeah. I feel like these two have been aware of the results of your poll, and they're just like, oh, you're gonna do this, I'm gonna do that, because they've done pretty much tit for tat back and forth. I mean, Nylander the day before scores two goals and then and puts on an absolute clinic, and then Marner has probably one of the best first periods I've ever seen. He had two goals in the first, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
and he was just all over the place, just dominated Finland. I mean, it's just good to know that those are your second and third best rookies.
See,
and not even rookies anymore.
Yeah. I think the thing that's I guess the best about this whole thing is that, like, when we first, like, knew that, you know, Nylander and Marner were going to go to the Worlds, like, what did we all say? Like, oh yeah, this is good, you know, build off the rookie season you had, you know, get experience, you know, be around some true NHL players and stuff like that. And especially in terms of Nylander's case, I don't think anyone thought that he'd be a driving force on that team. Like, he's been one of, like, the key contributors on that team, and definitely, like, definitely the reason for any of their success. So
I would have seen that. I mean, he was probably, if you look at their roster, he was probably one of the top three guys in terms of points.
Well, you just look at Sweden as a whole, just every player, Swedish player, where does he rank among the forwards in terms of talent and skill?
Probably two.
Like that's what Sweden is not as, you know, there's very few players that are similar to Nylander now. Like, they've kind of, the way that the makeup of their, you know, of their team is a lot different. I mean, Nylander is one of the few that reminds you of a old school Swedish player with the skill and the flash. Because a lot of them now are more, like, if you look at a guy like Grundström, who's playing well with the Marlies, he's not exactly the flashiest guy. He's just a very smart, you know, he's not afraid to be physical. So I think Nylander is just a different type of player for that team. I mean, his skill is just off the wall. I mean, just seeing Babcock's reaction after, I think it was, you know, one of the goals he scored early in the tournament off the, you know, I think it was like a partial break when he just sniped it. And Babcock's just like grinning, like an evil grin, like, yeah.
Yep, that's my player. Good player.
He's ours for the, you know, he's the least property for foreseeable future. Sorry, Omar. Jake is the champ when it comes to Babcock impressions.
Yeah, I can't do it. I tried.
I mean, it's a lot different situation between Nylander and Marner. Marner didn't come in as the, you know, he is. Sorry, I'm just looking at a couple of comments here. Do you mean the Preds game, Jake? Jake is giving us some insights.
Yeah, it's just Mike Babcock is at the Predators versus Ducks game, so maybe he's doing a little scouting or something.
Okay, well, I would definitely believe that. No, and I think Marner had a bit of a tougher road to establish himself on Canada, because he came in as the fourth line winger with Braden Point and Travis Konecny, who are good players, but they're not supposed to be the top players on Team Canada. I mean, one of the goals he scored today against Finland was a nice, that pass from Scheifele. The backhand pass, spinning around, and I mean, that's probably one of the easier goals he scored. And then the toe drag. Like, that's the Marner that I think we missed in the playoffs. I mean, obviously, I think it was just, you know, having that break between the playoffs and the tournament maybe gave him some rejuvenation. But that's the Marner you're hoping to see next season, you know, late in the late final stretch and in the playoffs.
I mean, you could tell down the stretch he was clearly wasn't healthy. Obviously, the mono really did make sense when Babcock said it. But it looks like he's back to what we thought he was going to be going into the playoffs. And yeah, he's been absolutely killing it on that kid line with Braden Point and Konecny.
Like, Braden Point's come out of nowhere, in my opinion. Ever since he was called up by the Lightning. I mean, he probably wouldn't have had the chance to showcase himself like he did if they didn't have the injuries that they did. So I find Braden Point is a great story. I mean, unfortunately, it's for Tampa Bay, who seems to get every single break you can think of. But no, I enjoy that kid. I mean, he's had some shifts on other lines too, and just the passes he's making, the plays he's making, it's you wonder how he's able to do it. I mean, the having, you know, the European ice, more ice available to him just helps with that, I think. So you know, it's good to see Marner remind people that he's actually a good player for some people who were doubting him in the playoffs.
Who was doubting him? The kid's 19.
And he
who was doubting him needs to go home, man. Just stop watching the games at that point. Seriously. Talk about the Marlies a bit, guys.
Yeah.
7-game series against the Crunch here. They're going to game 7, obviously.
They're alive.
Yeah. Right when you think they're dead, they just keep winning and just keeping this series going and going and going. One of the pleasant surprises, or what some would say is kind of like a turning point for them, was inserting Carl Grundstrom into the lineup.
Yeah.
Thoughts on how he's played so far, guys?
He's been a beast.
Mark Hunter.
He's a big, thick kid. I cannot believe how big he is. Look at his face. His face looks like the size of a chair.
I mean, he's definitely got some meat in his bones and in his face especially. But I mean, we always knew he had that big wicked shot, but his presence on the power play and, you know, just setting up in front of the net, he's kind of made that his little office, and he's been really impressive through. I think he's played about 4 games and he's got maybe 4 or 5 points.
Yeah, he's played 5 games. He has 4 points. So,
I saw an article on some Canucks website where they were talking about the Leafs, what they could get if they traded Tanev, and everybody was just like, "What about that Grundstrom guy?" And it's like, no. So that's, I guess it's nice that he's getting love from other fan bases, but yeah, he looks like he's going to be a hell of a player.
Yeah, just a reminder to Canucks fans, we're not the Senators who decide to give up prospects for guys like Alexander Burrows.
Well, I mean, Tanev's at least a good player. I mean, Burrows is absolute
well,
bum.
I mean, I just had to take a little shot at both the Canucks and Senators in one sentence. You don't really get those opportunities all the time, so.
I mean, do we even have to take a shot at the Canucks? Just look at them. They had, what, 50 less points, and they're drafting 10 picks above us? Oh, I mean, come on.
Gotta love the draft. One thing I will say about Grundstrom, Chris, is that, as Jake said, his size. I mean, we talk about the Leafs wingers, and, you know, you look at the prospect depth, and, I mean, Jake, one of your favorites, Jeremy Bracco, you know, kind of a smaller forward. This guy has got size, and he has skill, and he's not afraid to just get in those dirty areas. I think that makes it kind of has him stand apart from the other prospects. Whether he gets a realistic shot in the NHL, I think most will agree that the AHL is probably where he's going to be. So I would say that I've been very impressed with his debut, especially because he came right from Sweden. He was inserted into the lineup in the second round. I mean, he didn't play the first game, but it's because he came and they kind of had to get him signed to a contract before he can actually play. So I've been impressed with the way he's been able to come in and not get overwhelmed with the fact that he's playing in a different surface, you know, ice surface, and he's playing in the AHL playoffs, which are no cakewalk. So he's probably been one of the more impressive players on the team, but there have been a lot of things to like about the way the Marlies are playing.
Yeah, I mean, watching the games, Grundstrom does remind me of two guys a lot. Especially when he's in front of the net, he reminds me of Thomas Holmstrom. The way he's just so tough to push off his spot, and he's so strong on his skates and everything. He's just a beast in front of the net. And given his size and skill combination, yeah, I know Leo's the easy one here, but he kind of has a little Johan Franzén into his game too. Not as skilled, but he's got a little bit of that grit skill to his game that probably a little bit better than Leo Komarov, in my opinion.
Didn't even make your way out of the country with that comparison, huh?
Didn't need to. Set itself up too well.
Yeah.
Guys, off the air, we talked a lot about this. Jake, you brought this up. I know you're pissed that Overdrive kind of stole your idea before you could mention it here. Best
they
trio
did.
In the NHL of 3 players. You know what? The floor is yours. Explain what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I brought this up a week ago, at least, and I was thinking about it.
when I was watching the Oilers playing with Draisaitl and McDavid, and I asked you guys a question. I said, would you guys trade Leon Draisaitl or trade our three young rookies, Marner, Matthews, and Nylander for McDavid and Draisaitl? And I thought about it. I obviously said I would do it because I think those two are just complete stars, and you're getting probably two of the best three players in that deal. But it was just something where you can apply it to all of other teams across the league. And they were talking about it with, you know, a three pack of players to compare with the Leafs three. And, they brought up some interesting teams that you didn't think, and you're like, wow, this team actually has some decent amount of talent. I mean, you go around, you know, you got Tampa, you got Hedman, Stamkos, and Kucherov. So, I mean, there's tons of different teams, but I was thinking about it. There aren't many threesomes that I would deal those three for. And obviously the Oilers three, which they included Klefbom in there too, which I would definitely do. But it's just nice to know that we're the envy of many teams, probably about 25 or so.
Well, yeah, if you rewind, like, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, you used to watch, like, other teams, like, come in and destroy their Leafs, and you'd see, like, a good player and be like, oh, I wish the Leafs had a player like that. You know, like, oh, I wish the Leafs had a goaltender like that. Like, oh, a nice save, nice save, random goal out of nowhere. And now it's, like, now to watch Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and William Nylander and just, like, have the satisfaction in knowing, like, oh, like, there are is, like, you know, this trio we can see, like, going through, like, a long cup run. You know, or an Eastern Conference final, a Stanley Cup final, or heck, even win the cup. You know what I mean? I think you can actually see it. And I think the beauty of it is not even just them. There's a lot of other players, too. You know, like, going into the season, everyone was focusing on, obviously, Matthews, Nylander, Marner again. But, like, the other rookies and, like, Anderson and you know, and Babcock being able to manage all those players and get them to play the right way. I think it's just great to see that we can now place the Leafs in that like elite kind of tier of NHL teams moving forward. So, you know, great to see, great to live, and yeah, I like my big three.
Jake, you would actually take McDavid and Draisaitl over the Leafs three?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I mean, McDavid's great. Draisaitl is pretty good.
Pretty good?
I know.
Man, they're really good.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm saying pretty good, not just okay, like our good old boy Randy there. So,
Dave, Draisaitl's the only reason that wasn't a sweep. I think he had like 15 points in that series.
Yeah, he had like, what, 5 points in that one game? So
You look at the lines they have. I'm like, how the hell did they do that? That's how good those two are.
Yeah.
Because... Mm-hmm. McDavid had almost a point a game, and they're like, oh, he was invisible. it's like he is basically he's being watched by their entire team to the point where they just disregard Draisaitl, who put up like 14 points in the series. I mean, that's incredible. And
the big problem for Edmonton, man, is you got that second line that's a barren wasteland for all playoffs.
Second line?
How about the third line? Nugent Hopkins and Lucic. Yeah, I mean, but if you really want to pick on the line making a lot of money, yeah, you got to do better.
Oh,
than what they were
dude,
doing.
Yeah, like 19.5 between Nuge, and Lucic.
They had one goal.
But that it's was pathetic. A good deal, guys.
I mean, if they actually had like non morons running their team who could actually pick players, they would have probably won this year.
Yeah. Mm. People had them as a dark horse to win the cup, and I'm like, look,
I didn't see it personally, but, you know, they're obviously a very good team. They need to add to that team because I don't think they will ever win a championship if it's just those two. Yeah. And what I saw was it was just those two.
Well, almost every cup champion in the last how many years had depth? I mean,
they had none.
Yeah, the Oilers don't have any. I mean, and maybe that's kind of what happened to Washington. They just didn't have the depth. In, you know, other than, you know, I guess the top two lines to keep the offense going. Like,
I mean, Washington also just didn't score in a game seven. They're a better
choke, man. Their defense is too slow and old, and they just
I'll take four lines over any of those two lines or two, three, four lines in the Oilers.
I just think that's what the Leafs are doing though. They're not relying on two lines to drive everything. It's a four line team. It's a three pairing, although it became two pairing very quickly in that series. So the Leafs are not worried about getting one player. They're worried about getting guys for every single line. They're all going to contribute as one unit.
Yeah, and I think back to the point on depth. Babcock on Dreger's Cafe in Paris said that he really admired Tampa, how they had a whole bunch of injuries and stuff, but their depth was able to keep them in the race until the end of the season. And he says right now the Leafs aren't there, but they can get there. And I think they are close to Dave's point, where they're a lot more deep throughout the four lines and the three defensive pairings than other teams are. So instead of looking at like one person or a couple of guys, they have to add to be impact players. They don't really need to look for those impact players. Just people to complement the rest of the lineup and get the job done for them.
I mean, the thing that's important with Tampa is obviously the fact that they have probably the best scouting staff in the whole league. The thing that's noticeable with Tampa is they seemingly add one or two impact rookies every single year. I mean, this year is Braden Point. Last year is Jonathan Drouin. The year before it was, you know, Palat, Johnson, and Killorn. The year before that, Kucherov and, you know, Stamkos and Hedman and go on and on. I mean, Vasilevsky. They always are bringing up new guys. You know, now it's going to be Gusev and Radish and Mitchell Stevens and, you know, all these guys. So that's what you're going to have to do with the Leafs. And obviously we've looked at, you know, Mark Hunter's past two drafts. I mean, I think it's safe to say that he's probably in the past two drafts gotten maybe eight players that have the potential to be NHL regulars, 8 to 10 maybe. And one of them, I'm basing a draft off of what was done 10 months ago, which isn't even fair. So that's who you're going to have to do to be like Tampa, who I don't know how they don't have a championship yet, but they seem like a team that if they don't break through, it would be a major shock to me. I mean, you know, and they've been on this, you know, 3 or 4 year run, and they've been to a cup final and the Eastern Conference final in two of the past 3 years. So they're not a team I'm concerned about, but that's who I would model the way you're built off right now.
They're kind of equipped to do that as well when you look at what they're doing. I mean, I think it's the 2013 draft. I got to go back and look, double check. The Marner draft, what year was that?
2015,
sorry. You look at all the guys in that draft. I mean, go as deep as the seventh round and Karosalev might pan out to something. So
they got like seven guys in that draft.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's stacked. So that could be the start of what you guys are saying with the Tampa analogy there. So I don't know. Optimistic, but cautiously optimistic still. I think that wraps it up, guys.
Yeah.
Anything else you guys want to touch on before we go? Are we good?
I think good.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right. Curry just hit an N13, so they're up 30.
Yeah, I shut that shit off. I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this week's episode of the Toronto Maple Leafs podcast, brought to you by tipofthetower.com. As always, you can follow the show on Facebook and Twitter at Tip of the Tower. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and SoundCloud at Tip of the Tower. You can follow me on Twitter at Crystal Kranitz. You can follow Dave on Twitter at D_Morisuti. You can follow Omar on Twitter at OLW93. And you can follow Jake on Twitter at JakeMiddleton12. Thanks for listening, guys. And we'll be back next week to talk about, I don't know, maybe free agency or the NHL draft. We'll see if there's another signing. But we'll be back talking about one of those three. Until then, take care.
Toronto is proud and happy to select from Modo, Sweden, William Nylander.
The Knights, Mitch Marner.